This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, it's just gone 5 minutes past six on this Thursday, and another Thursday, and I say historic, it's just another State of the Nation address. It just used to be the opening of Parliament, but it did turn into quite a svelte affair at the end of the Mbeki administration into the Zuma administration. It turned into an evening affair. It always used to be on a Friday morning. It's now pride of place, 7 o'clock on a Thursday evening, because that's apparently when people want to hear things and not watch soapies or do other things that they do at 7 o'clock. Well, what we do at 6 o'clock on a Thursday is chat to Jeremy Sampson, the Executive Director of Brand Finance Africa, who is back in our Joburg studio, or on the line, I don't know which. Jeremy, how are you doing?
Michael, good to be with you from a very grey Johannesburg.
Oh, a grey Johannesburg. Well, I would give a high-felt thunderstorm for the sweltering and bergwindy Cape Town heat that we've had. And I think perhaps a reflection of the heat ratcheting up on the president at the moment ahead of the sauna tonight. And if he is under pressure, there is a lot of heat. Let's face it, this does seem to be a crucible, a seminal moment. It certainly doesn't show. He has been Mr. Cool, Mr. Suave and Charming at the Mining Indaba this year, with all of the international delegates certainly lapping him up. We are rather more cynical here in South Africa, and we're saying a little less conversation, a little more action, please, Mr. President, while the foreign onlookers seem to be saying, let's cut him a little bit more slack. How do you read the mood as we head into a very crucial State of the Nation?
Well, as you said earlier, at the Mining Indaba, which, let's face it, is an extremely important few days, he's acted, as he always does, presidentially. And to me, that's one of the major things about leadership, is how people behave and how they speak and their tone of voice. And I think we're very fortunate to have a president at the moment who behaves in a way that is seen as presidential and connects not just with the local audience, but the international audience as well. Now, let's face it, he's coming up to what is it, about 400 days as president. We know that it's an election year, so that election will be, what, end of April, early May, whenever. Also, some of the commentators have been saying today, his hands are largely tied because, let's face it, he's leader of the ANC, and thus they are the government, but no, he has to project their policy. And everyone's saying, well, wait until the election. Hopefully he'll be freed up to do more things. And again, as you said, hopefully he will be freed up to do more things. But at the moment, I think largely he's treading water. So I see the expectation as very, very high. But let's hope I'm wrong.
Well, Jeremy, I agree with you there on one or two levels, but I might disagree on a third level. Yes, he is hamstrung by the internal party politics of the ANC and the political game and the real politic of navigating factional politics inside the ruling party. But what I get as a sense from Ramaphosa is a consensus builder and a consensus seeker who manages to transcend those internal party politics and build a vision and a consensus beyond and outside of that. And the reason I say that is many of the international investors that I've had the real pleasure and privilege of interacting with over the last few days have been quite horrified by the sense of pessimism around South Africa. They say, yes, you know, you could have been the next Brazil, you could have been the next Venezuela if we had another 10 years of the rapacious state capture regime that we've just seen the back of. But now you have an individual who is clearly and markedly different from that. He's a constitutionalist. He carries with him a sense of leadership, as you mentioned earlier, that almost transcends those internal party politics. And within that, we really do have, and this is my personal sense, a treasure around which we need to unify right now.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you at all, because we've spoken before that I think we do need to unify, we do need to support him, we need to help him. And this is where we wish that all good, strong people would stand up and support him. No, one mustn't forget his background, you know, National Union of Mine Workers, He is a negotiator. He's a lawyer. He's been on the international stage and played a significant part, I believe, in the Irish discussion. So, as you say, he's a very good person bringing people together. And, you know, South Africa is so fragmented at the moment, that's what we need. We know as a nation we're punching under our weight. But as you found this week, there's so much goodwill out there, and people are saying, come on, get your act together. You've got so much opportunity. Let's be positive about things. So that's where I totally agree.
And it is refreshing to get that outsider's perspective, because we can be quite parochial. At the same time, we can't forget that Supra Mahumapelo won his court bid to be reinstated as chair of the Northwest ANC. There are forces and factions inside the ruling party that are hell-bent on getting their snouts back into the feeding trough. This is not to say we're naive, but this is to say that there are greater collective global forces that are rallying behind the president and his team of very good men. He announced today, through the finance minister, a panel that have been selected to choose the new head of SARS, led by Trevor Manuel. There's the likes of Judge Dennis Davis on the panel, Ismail Momoniat, other very competent technocrats who have the greatest integrity. So I just get the sense, Jeremy, that we do love to sell the negative narrative in South Africa, and perhaps we forget and forego the opportunities of this opportunity to turn the corner. And we are very often, and you're a brand expert, we are the architects of our downfall in that regard.
Well, again, you're absolutely right. You know, we talk of employees within a company having the ability to be the great ambassadors for the country or for the company, talking it up, or they can be saboteurs talking it down. And it's the same with our country. You know, all of us have that opportunity to be ambassadors. And I think as we all travel around, travel overseas, whatever, we have that opportunity. And this is where there are a lot of naysayers, perhaps people who lived in South Africa in the past, but are a little bit out of touch with what it's up to at the moment, and they're not as positive as they should be. So, totally agree with you, and this is where the international visitors who come here, it's a wonderful opportunity to showcase South Africa and show the positive aspects that are sitting there. And certainly, I think we're all saying, come on, Cyril, no, we're right behind you. You've got the wind behind you. You've got goodwill from around the world. South Africa has been treading water, if not going backwards, the last decade. Now is the time to start moving ahead and showing what South Africa is really worth.
Yeah, we're in desperate need of a Modi moment. He needs to roll out the red carpet to investors, to foreign visitors to our shores. He needs to broaden his campaign of bilateral appeal, which was poo-pooed somewhat when we saw that leak in the Sunday Times of a memorandum that was sent by the world superpowers in June of last year, in no uncertain terms, saying that they're willing to take his hand that he has extended as long as he clamps down on corruption, he ensures that there is some kind of accountability for the flagrant abuse of the rule of law that we've seen over the last 10 years. And what we have seen, at least to this point, is a very slow, systematic process of rebuilding the institutions, which, let's face it, over the last decade have been absolutely gutted. You don't rebuild those institutions overnight, but it starts with SARS. It starts with appointing a panel that is respected, that can be trusted to appoint the right head of the receiver. It starts with appointing a fierce and fair and independent head of the National Prosecuting Authority. And already we're starting to see some action there. So I do hope that all of these planks start to rebuild the foundations of trust and credibility. Speaking of mining companies earlier, though, and it's been a theme at the Mining Indaba, the mining brand is also feeling the searing heat in Cape Town. And globally, we've seen the horrendous story of the Vale slime dam collapse and 300 dead, and what must be done to make sure this doesn't happen again. Very, very important questions. But I think it really runs to the nub of the mining industry's image problem at the moment. How does the mining industry rebrand itself in a world where it's always been seen as exploitative and rapacious and having big environmental footprints and impacts, but very important. If we're going to transition, for example, into a green economy, we need miners, as Robert Friedland was saying. If we want to get off coal and go to an electric vehicle world, we need copper. That is a very important part of that process. We still need mining companies.
Still need mining companies, and as we've known from day one, mining is dangerous. People do lose their lives, and it doesn't matter how much accent is put on safety and how much money is invested in safety, there are still going to be dangers. You know, when you're 70,000 under feet or whatever, it is a dangerous place, and you have the gases, the rock falls, whatever. But I think this is where the industry, and I think the Minerals Council has played a significant role in this, have helped build the awareness of safety. Obviously, there are areas that humans won't go into. They can use mechanization. And sadly, though, by using mechanization, that might mean less jobs. But this is where you've got to get a balance and a compromise. But the industry, I think, is very, very cognizant of what's going on. They're very cognizant of safety. And, you know, all the leaders, and I'm sure they've been saying it repeatedly the last 4 days, that's what they work at all the time. One lost life is one too many.
And there's the nub of the argument, isn't it, Jeremy? I mean, we don't want lives to be lost. So what do? You try and mechanize. You try and automate a process that doesn't put human beings 3 kilometers underground. But in order to do that, you're taking jobs away from a very important sector. So it is a bit of a curate's egg in that regard, and how do you strike the right balance? But I think there is a much bigger global theme at play here that we also need to be very mindful of. And it was mentioned by Hilary Joffe. She was facilitating a panel with Chris Griffith, the CEO of Amplats, yesterday. And she mentioned peak ice. And I was quite surprised because Chris had never heard of peak ice. Now, you might be wondering, what the hell is Michael on about? What is peak ice? We've heard of peak oil. Well, it's the peak internal combustion engine. Apparently, we in 2018 saw the absolute apex of the production of the petrol diesel vehicle. And every year thereafter, so this year and every year into the future, we're not going to see as many internal combustion vehicles produced as we saw in 2018. And that has phenomenal implications for brands all over the auto sector.
Michael, you're such a mine of information here, excuse the pun, because you're right up to speed with what's been going on. But again, you've got to go back to the reality of what it's like underground. I know the days when Mark Cutifani was still at Anglo Gold Ashanti before he moved to Anglo American, talking to him about some of the challenges. And he was saying, well, in certain parts of the world, the miners don't wear shoes. And he was talking, I think, about Colombia, where he made sure everyone had shoes or boots that fitted. But then making a snap visit to the mine, he found the miners left their boots at the opening shop because they didn't like wearing shoes. So he said, you know, whichever way you try to do things sometimes, you're stymied. All you can do is keep on trying to educate the miners, the individuals, about safe practice, about safety, about what they can do to look after themselves and their limbs. And he said, after that, if they're not listening to you, you have to find people who will listen to you, because otherwise you're going to be in a dangerous place where the authorities accuse you of not looking after your employees.
Well, Jeremy, a very interesting comment was relayed to me, and then it was reaffirmed by the fact that the Mining Indaba organizers had a special event talking to the mine young leaders of the future. They are suffering as an industry from a huge, huge crisis brand sexiness problem. They are struggling to get young millennials into the mining industry. Millennials don't want to work in mining anymore. They don't want to don the old kind of staid image of, you know, a miner in a hard hat, or, you know, this very male dominated industry that pulls things out of the ground and, you know, has all sorts of environmental consequences. Yet it is a vital industry, as I mentioned to you earlier. And in terms of the brand of mining, I think they have to do an awful lot of work in order to feed that skill Steel's pipeline to build the mine of the future. Another big thing that was spoken about was the mine of the future being digital, and how we need to move the mindset beyond the old way of open pits and people with rock drills and operating trucks. All of that can be done remotely. There are drones in mines now. There's all this technological disruption happening, but they don't have the skills to drive these innovations.
No, and there you put your finger on something. You need the skills. You know, going forward, we need people who are educated, and who are educated in the right manner and the right subjects, who can be relevant today. Whether we have robots going underground, whether we have everything, as you say, mechanized, you've still got to have people who are engineers who can operate them. And this is where education looms very large here. You've got to make sure that the individuals who are underground know what to do and can behave accordingly. Now, again, I think AngloGold Ashanti has room for about 50 apprentices every year. They were, even a few years ago, having trouble filling those spaces. And as you say, looking forward with millennials, it's not just mining millennials don't want to do. They don't want to buy diamonds. They don't want to drink wine. Millennials are a whole group of people that, if you don't keep on marketing, and this is where it comes back to branding, if you don't keep on marketing a subject, you'll have a whole generation or a whole slice of the world who says, that's not for me, or why should I do it? So all the time, you've got to keep educating and marketing and making them aware. I'm still sure there are a lot of people in the Free State, you know, who are still miners up to, well, they're second or third generation miners.
Absolutely. It's in our DNA,
Jeremy.
Exactly. It's in our DNA, Jeremy. And I was chatting to Chris Griffith about this exact thing. He understands the supply demand dynamics of the platinum industry. You can recycle the product by its nature. What you have to do to stimulate the demand is market platinum jewelry, the same way De Beers pulled off the marketing coup of the last century in marketing diamonds as a girl's best friend.
Yes, and, you know, when you keep on talking like that, you keep on marketing, you keep on projecting, but people stop. They think, oh, everyone is aware of this, or everyone knows this, and you forget that there are new people coming to market. The fact of the matter is that in South Africa, we sometimes are our own worst enemy, where, you know, even this afternoon, there was a snap on television of people dying down a mine. And this was in the Middelburg area, I believe, in Mpumalanga. And the spokesperson was saying, well, the mine has been closed because people stole the copper cables, so the fans don't work, and the machinery doesn't work down there. So we've got some miners down there who are dead, illegal miners. And then apparently part of the community decided to go down and try and pull them out. And they broke through the police line, and they ended up dying because of the methane gas down there. And that really underlines sometimes the basics of the dangers of mining and the dangers of people who are amateurs going where fully trained engineers wouldn't go.
Jeremy Sampson, Managing Director of Brand Finance Africa, ending off on a rather important and reflective sober note on the dangers of Zama Zamas and illegal mining, but the importance of the mining industry to really grab the opportunity to really walk the talk when it comes to its social license and its reputation, and bring it into the 21st century.